Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway. Thank you for joining me and giving me about an hour of your time this Sunday morning. I'm here every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, and you know, I'm based right out of Baltimore, Maryland, right here at 1500 Radio. And although we stream this show all around the world, actually, and I've had guests from all over the country, and I'll continue to do that, but for the last month or so, my guests have been primarily from the Baltimore City area, and I've focused on what I call the gems in our backyard here in Baltimore. And I've done that for several different reasons. One is because although I was born and raised in Baltimore, I left here while I was in the military and was gone for quite some time. And though I would come back, you know, for the holidays or just to visit my friends, dip and dab, I still wasn't invested. You know, I'd come home, have some fun, and then I'd dip back out and go back home. But now that I've come back and I'm working here and I've spent time here and I'm hosting events here for the last couple of years, I've fallen back in love with my hometown. And I've discovered some things that I never knew were here before I left, some, as I call, gems. But I also discovered something else, something that really concerns me. You know, Baltimore, like a lot of major cities, more than ever before, is at a crossroads. There's a huge tug of war going on in this city between hope and hopelessness. And if you walk through the city or as you drive around the city, you can literally feel it. Now, I spent an entire hour on a show that I ran 2 weeks ago where I highlighted the amazing 96-year-old Dr. Ruth Sheffy, where I spoke about the enormous value that I believe that the elderly, in particular the black elderly, have in this community and how we do not tap into that value. And I do still feel strongly that it is a natural resource that we have to tap into. But I also had an opportunity recently by invitation to speak at a high school downtown here in Baltimore. Shout out to the Bliss School, the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, who do tremendous work here in the city and have for quite some time. But you know, I didn't know what to expect. I spoke to a senior class of young ladies, 17 years old primarily. And you know what's funny, as I reflect back on it, public speaking pretty much my entire adult life is what I've been paid to do. I have literally traveled the world speaking to presidents and prime ministers and many other foreign dignitaries from many different countries. I mean, I announced presidential galas for Bush and for Clinton that were televised to millions of people. I had people like Colin Powell, rest in peace, on speed dial. He was a mentor of mine. And that's not to toot my own horn, but it's to let you know that back then, I had no consciousness when I did it. It was something that I thrived in. I never got nervous. The bigger the event, the more comfortable I was and the better I performed. But for some reason, the thought of walking into that high school and speaking to these young ladies, these 17-year-old young ladies, had your boy shook. I'm not going to kid you. Like, I walked in not knowing what potential hornet's nest I was going to walk into. I mean, you know, I've heard all of the stories about high schools and the kids here now and how disrespectful they can be. So in many ways, in my mind, I was walking onto the stage of the Apollo and I was waiting to get, you know, that crowd to start booing me and then have the Sandman come out and yank me off the stage, you know, that kind of situation. Because at the end of the day, all I was doing was telling my story. My story of abuse and neglect as a child and how hopeless I felt at that time and how my life went from that to where I am now. Now, telling that story to the select few adults that I've told that story to, they said they found it inspirational. But I'd never stood in front of a group of young ladies, of young 17-year-old women, and told my story. And so I didn't know what to expect. But what I found was a group of young people who were completely engaged and completely respectful. They were so engaged and attentive, in fact, that I could read in their eyes the difference between some of them being hopeful and on the edge of their seats and they couldn't wait to ask me questions when I was done, and they did. I could feel that they were going to dissect the little information that they got from me, apply it what they could to their lives, and move on and conquer whatever it is they needed to conquer. But then there was the other few that I saw in their eyes. And like Al Pacino said famously in the movie Scarface,
"The eyes, Chico, they never lie."
Yeah, the eyes. They never lie. And I could see the hopelessness in those eyes. And they would ask questions as well, but it was for a different reason. I could hear it in their voice and the type of question that they asked. It wasn't to go and conquer anything. It was more to get information on how to just hold on in the hopeless situation outside of school that they find themselves living in every day. It's easy to forget that a lot of these kids are raising kids when they go home from school, their own or someone else in their families. Or they have a full-time job outside of school that supplements the entire family's income. Or they have drug-addicted parents at home. Or they have an abusive parent at home. Or they have a combination of all of these things that they're dealing with in addition to coming to school every day. I could see it in their eyes and I could hear it in their voice. It's a stark contrast to the group of hopefuls that I also spoke to at the same time. So I'm not really concerned about the hopefuls. We already have seen over and over again what Black Girl Magic can do with a black young woman who decides that she can and will. There ain't no stopping her. I'm not worried about her. I'm worried about the hopeless. I'm worried about the young people in this town who feel that they absolutely have no choice other than to stay in the situation that they're in, that they feel completely stuck, who, although may really want to go, feel like they will never experience the college life. And no, I don't suggest that college is the end-all be-all that ends everyone's problems or makes you a complete success. That's not what I'm saying. It's not magic. You still got to put in a lot of work. But I do believe that if you really want to go, you should have an opportunity to go. That opportunity should be afforded to you in some way. And if you're a young black person living in Baltimore City, where there are two great HBCUs with great reputations here in this city, you shouldn't be, as a young person, feeling stuck in a hopeless situation. If you're getting decent grades, you should feel comfortable and confident in reaching out to these universities. But also, these universities should really be reaching out to you. They should be helping you find a way to afford their services, to not only tell you how to get to their school, but to tell you what to expect when you get there, what they have to offer. So I found someone. I didn't just find anyone. I found a man who, although is very, very busy, also realizes that hopelessness is a catastrophic and contagious disease that can affect an entire community. He, like some of us, found hope in the most crazy places and decided that he was not going to stay in a no-win situation. So he went about his life and did some amazing things that we're going to talk to him about, but ultimately landed here in Baltimore. And I honestly feel fortunate to have him here in Baltimore because it appears that he came with one goal, and that is to provide hope and opportunity for the young people here in this city by providing them a great environment in which to learn. And I really mean that. He is, in fact, where the buck stops, at a great learning institution in this city. So 1500, please help me welcome the 8th president of Coppin State University, Dr. Anthony L. Jenkins. All right, Dr. Jenkins, thank you so much for joining me today here on 1500 Radio. I got to ask you, because I always want to know what people's motivations are for getting started. You're running a university. Where did the education piece start for you?
Listen, Brian, that's an excellent question. And first of all, it's a pleasure to be with you this morning. And thank you for having me on and providing this platform for me to talk about Coppin State University. So, for me, shortly after I completed my master's degree from North Carolina Central University, I had a job opportunity where I was focusing on research and had an opportunity to bump into an individual who would later become a lifelong mentor to me. And that individual was a vice president for student affairs.
Okay.
And we developed a very strong relationship. And based on what my mother, who did not go to college, had always told me, my sister, and my two brothers about the value of education. That stuck with me. And as a first-generation college kid, I learned how education, a quality education, could change one's life. And then this mentor created a pathway for me to see education as a vehicle for upward and economic mobility. And so that's where it really started for me and my love for education, and more so higher education. Because as an undergraduate, there's no degree that prepares you to become a university president or
right.
a university administrator. So it was really this learning through his mentorship that was very profound in shaping my direction to the presidency.
So where did you grow up?
Listen, I am from Southeast D.C.
Okay.
I am one of four children. I have a beautiful sister and two brothers. And my mother and father divorced when I was four. And she raised us and did an incredible job of making sure that we did not get sidetracked by the trappings sometimes that are out there in some of our, urban areas.
Right.
But she did a tremendous job. I had wonderful teachers coming up. And then because my mother and grandmother are from North Carolina, I finished up my last year in North Carolina. So I call Washington, D.C., and North Carolina home.
Okay. Now, when you grew up in Southeast, Southeast was Southeast. Now, there's a gentrification thing that's gone on over there now, but when you were there, you know what I'm saying, Southeast was Southeast. So how did your mom, I guess like a lot of single mothers do, how did she manage to keep you out of that stuff? Because that's the same thing goes on here in Baltimore. So were there programs that you were involved in that just kept you out of the throes of crime?
No, you know, Brian, there were outside of the CEDA program, which was a summer work program, outside of that, I grew up on 4th and Chesapeake, and we lived in Second Court, and my court and the court next to us was really my entire community.
Okay.
And so without any, city programs and so forth, it was the community taking care of itself. And everyone in our block and on the next block knew each other.
Okay.
And we had Miss Smith, who would hang out of the, third story window. And she knew every kid who was in the, parking lot playing kickball or playing tag or sandlot football.
Right.
And if you didn't belong, she would call you out. And if you were acting up, even if you did belong, she would call
Correct.
You out.
Correct.
So she was kind of the, block mother while the other mothers and fathers were at work because she was up in age, probably, tired. But that's the type of community that I grew up in. And we really valued that more so as you got older looking back. But that's who we were. And that were, those were the expectations that you were going to have a certain level of dignity and respect, self-respect, and you were going to avoid reckless behavior and judgment that could adversely impact you. Those were the expectations of my mother, and those expectations, to a certain extent, also spilled out into the, into my neighborhood.
Gotcha. The reason I ask, because there is a pathway that you took, right, to be the success that you are and entrusted in running a university with so many young minds. And so I was trying to find out what that path was, because there are a lot of inner city kids who might want to follow in those footsteps. And if they know that they can, then the hopelessness leaves them. You know what I mean? Now, were you always a great student?
No. It was just the opposite. listen, I was a student athlete. And so the physical abilities were there, and they were groomed over time.
Okay.
I was a football player. I was a track star. But it was my teachers. I had several teachers, Ms. McCoy, Ms. Carroll, who stepped in at a very early age and helped me to greater appreciate the potential that was within me.
Okay.
And they were an extension of what my mother was always on me about. And, my mother rolled me like a jockey, and I'm glad that she did.
Right.
Because when the, street lights came on, I better have been on that stoop. And if she called me more than once, then I was in big trouble, right? So, but these teachers helped me to understand, one, is don't ever dumb yourself down. Two, stop being the class clown.
Right.
Three, they noticed how the other students responded to me, and they said and challenged me. They would indicate, you have something in you that's greater than what you appreciate now. I watch how people respond to you. Use that for something that's beneficial and not for stand-up comedy. And so I had to accept that feedback and that criticism in a way that did not break or tear me down. But I internalized it and assessed it from the perspective that, they were right, right? I wasn't giving my all. I wasn't giving my all to my academics in the same way I was giving my all to my athletics.
Okay.
And so they really challenged me on that. And as a first-generation college kid, as I said earlier, when I left high school, my mom talked to us about college with what limited knowledge she had because she had never went. But I opted to pass up on a D2 low-level athletic scholarship to enroll in the United States Army. And it was one of the best decisions, Brian, I had made.
You don't have to tell me, brother.
Because when I was there,
I did the same thing.
Yep. So when I was there, I was made platoon guide And I was put in charge at, you know, 18 years old, because I was 17 at the time. And my mother had to sign me in under the deferred program. And here I am thrust into this situation where I was in charge of nearly 300 guys. Some were all older than me. Some were prior military from, you know, other services and things of that nature. And so that really shaped me. The, you know, discipline piece is where it benefited me the most. The physical aspect, I could handle whatever Uncle Sam threw at me. It was the structure and the discipline that was so significant and so beneficial to me. I still apply many of my teachings then to the work I do today.
Okay. So why Coppin State? Of all the schools, why Coppin State?
You know, I was asked that question when I was announced as the next president of Coppin State. Before this, I served as president at West Virginia State University. And there were some other institutions that were in the mix when I was looking at Coppin, and they had made some offers. Coppin State University is a dynamic institution. I was excited by what my research revealed about Coppin. I was excited even more with every conversation that I had about Coppin through the interview process.
Okay.
I was excited about what the potential is for this institution. And I felt my backdrop, where I've seen higher education, Brian, from multiple perspectives, from the largest universities in this country to Hispanic serving, to historically white, historically black, urban, rural, it made no difference. I felt that I had been prepared for this moment. And this university, who has been punching above its weight for so long, has not truly gotten the accolades that it deserves and the work that the faculty, staff, and students do here every day. And so I felt I could come and be a great asset and a compliment to Coppin. But I also knew Coppin was the type of university that would also continue to thrive and push me both from a personal and professional standpoint. And I just felt it was a good mix.
You know, being very honest, I'm a Morganite, right?
Okay.
But, <All right. laughs> but I grew up closer to Coppin. You know, I grew up near Mondawmin in that area, right? And hung out there and all of that good stuff. So I was very familiar with Coppin. I understood that Coppin State was here, but it just never had the same name recognition that Morgan did, just like you said. But now I've seen in the last 10, 15 years, you guys have gobbled up a lot of real estate in the area, right? And I'm trying to figure out what's the plan that you're now so much a part of the city. I mean, you've always been, but now in real estate and size, you've grown so much. How did that come to be?
You listen, I give a lot of credit to you know, the previous presidents and the administration, the faculty and staff who've been at this institution long before I got here. They have done an outstanding job, and they have had great visions in looking at where we want to take Coppin State, with the understanding that there were both internal and external challenges. When I arrived, Brian, I started talking about we were going to introduce and reintroduce Coppin State, and that our pace was going to be brisk and our trajectory was going to be north.
Okay.
I knew there were folks out there who did not know Coppin that we needed to introduce ourselves to. And I also knew there were folks who had an outdated perspective of Coppin, and that we were bigger than Coppin College, which we were up until 2004. And when we became a university, then the philosophical workings of the institution had to change, and they did. Colleges are designed to serve. Universities are designed to solve and serve. And Coppin became about the business in that time frame that you talked about, of solving and being more integrated into West Baltimore and many of the challenges that are in West Baltimore. And we knew that we could be a solution driver to those problems.
Okay.
And so that's been one of the, you know, biggest pieces. And then with that, grew interest and people wanted to know more about Compton. So we started looking at our footprint and saying, how can we grow? Because we were such a small footprint in this beautiful urban, you know, landscape. It's how do we grow? That means we had to acquire additional acreage for the university to do just that.
You're a champion of creating opportunities for students, especially those that are from underrepresented communities, so to speak. When you came to Compton, did you devise or come up with special programs for these communities?
We did. You know, what we did, and keep in mind, I came in 2020 in the midst of, you know, a global pandemic.
Right.
Unlike anything that we had ever seen in, you know, modern times, and still trying to navigate through that and trying to stand up a university in the midst of that, move it forward, and also get my feet under me. Those were very challenging times, but they also presented wonderful opportunities for us to look at our students, identify what their needs were, and then strategically start putting in place the type of support systems, the technology, the wraparound, holistic services that they needed to be successful. And so, yes, we started looking at how we do a better job of retaining our students and enhancing student persistence as well as students' overall success and graduation. And what we were able to do, Brian, is that we were able to increase our six-year graduation rate to historic highs. We were able to help our students from a financial standpoint who were adversely impacted by the, you know, pandemic. And we were able to build stronger senses of community all across campus. One of the things we also did was we decentralized and created a centralized student retention effort on campus, which was more intrusive and more proactive, using things like predictive analytics and a greater ethic of care. So we created our Eagle Achievement Center, which is a one-stop shop,
right,
which has the services that allows us to have a 360-degree view of our students, of a very diverse student population. And so that new center came online just a couple of weeks ago. But prior to that, we had been revamping our policies and our procedures, and we saw a 7% increase in our retention rate this past year compared to the year prior. So we are on the right path and moving in the right direction. And so we are very excited about where we're headed in the persistence rates of our students.
Okay. Well, retention rate is great, and the graduation rate is great. As far as enrollment numbers, now they're down across the state and most colleges here in the state. And Coppin State is no different. What are you trying to do to increase the enrollment rate?
Yeah, so excellent, you know, question again, Brian. And this is something that the pandemic has really magnified for us here at Coppin. We had, prior to the pandemic, saw a decline in our enrollment, and the pandemic obviously didn't help. But what we were able to do was, through retention and persistence and being more laser focused in some areas, really strengthen some of those pockets that we believe is helping us turn our retention and enrollment challenges around. I will say this: Compton doesn't have an enrollment issue. We have a retention issue.
Okay.
In fact, we were one of only three schools in USM this past fall that were recognized for enrollment growth in our freshman and transfer student cohort, and for us as well as our graduate students. What we've seen is that our students face financial challenges that put them in the position where they sometimes have to stop out or fall to part-time or drop out and come back to us to finish a degree because of financial issues. We educate the highest percentage of Pell-eligible students when compared to any other four-year university or college in the state of Maryland. And therefore, it takes more resources and more time to get those students over the finish line. And so we have been very strategic in our efforts of helping our students close that financial gap. And I'm pleased to say, because of historic fundraising levels, that last year we awarded over $9.5 million to help our students stay in school, start a college degree, or finish one. And I am very excited about that. And what we're also doing is for our students who earn 30 semester credit hours in one academic year, mm-hmm. they can earn, starting this summer, up to 6 hours of summer school for free.
Okay.
That's a part of our efforts to keep students moving and making sure that finances are not an issue, that students do not earn a degree. So our retention has taken a hit based on those factors, but students continue to come to us on the front end because of who we are and the national programs that we're recognized for.
Okay. So I interviewed Wes Moore a while ago. One of his major concerns was the lack of STEM programs in high schools. I understand that you're big on STEM academics.
Yes.
Do you guys, and you're familiar with sports because you were an athlete, and just like coaches go to high schools and junior high schools and now elementary schools recruiting players, do you guys have anyone or anyone on your staff that goes to these high schools and junior high schools trying to recruit people to cop in? I mean, it just seems like if you're always waiting for people to come to you as opposed to you going to them, it might be a stalemate sometimes, you know?
Yeah. You know, Brian, no, listen, you're absolutely correct, and you're spot on. So historically, that was Coppin's mode of operation, is that we would sit back and wait for students to come to us. Over the last several years, since I arrived, we've been very intrusive and very proactive and very intentional about our works of trying to recruit students to Coppin.
Okay.
And so, yes, we are nationally recognized for majors such as business, social work, healthcare. We have the number one nursing program amongst all Maryland HBCUs. Forbes ranked our psychology program one of the best in the country. Our teacher education program, STEM, those are all areas that we are nationally recognized for.
Right.
And so we're also focusing on developing our dual enroll program, where we will have outside of our admissions team that go out and actively recruit students for Coppin. This individual will also, this new dual enrollment area, will be focusing on dual enrollment programs and STEM, because we want to create pathways for students to get a jump start on their four-year college education with us here at Coppin. So they'll be able to take colleges while in high school with us, which allows them to get a jump start on their college career and save money, because that cost is so much less than if you wait until you graduate from high school.
Exactly.
And came to us as an incoming freshman. The other thing, Brian, that's very strong for us, or that is positive in the work that we're doing, is that we have Coppin Academy on our high school. On our campus, excuse me. We're the only four-year college or university in the state that has a high school on its campus.
Oh, wow.
9th through 12th grade, and we have 353 students approximately in Coppin Academy. Prior to my arrival, we were not doing dual enrollment with those students. We are now doing dual enrollment with those students so that they get a jump start, and we're also putting greater focus on the STEM areas, because we also know that's where the fastest growth in jobs,
exactly,
are being created in our city and in our state. And then lastly, I'll just say this, because as an anchor institution, we have such a huge economic impact on Baltimore and on Maryland to the tune of $250 million annually. 70% of our graduates, Brian, stay in Maryland after they graduate.
Okay.
And 48% of our graduates stay in Baltimore City. There was just a study done by Grad Reports that looked at graduates 1 year after they graduated with regards to their salaries and their job placements. And out of the four-year colleges and universities in Maryland, Coppin ranked 7th. And that was higher than bigger institutions and some of the schools you noted earlier with better name recognition. But what we've proven over and over again is that with a quality education from here, students can have greater upward and greater economic mobility. And those are the things that we're focusing on through that STEM pathway.
Okay. Talk to me about your fraternities and your sororities on campus. Now, I guess the Greek community is huge at HBCUs. Are they out in the community also recruiting for you guys? And how do you deal with, once these students get there and they want to join these fraternities, how do you deal with the hazing problems that other schools have had?
Yeah, so excellent question. So as I said earlier, we are revamping our entire recruitment model. We are using more of our students, they are Greek student athletes, honor students, presidential scholars, or students who just want to, you know, be engaged. We are using more of our students in the recruitment process.
Great.
Our Greek students are always a high profile student that, because not only for the letters that they wear, but because of their ability to step and to do those things,
exactly,
students are drawn to that. And so we use that to help in the recruitment process, but also to challenge our current Greek students to understand that they have a responsibility that's far greater than just their individual fraternity or sorority. They are a part of a community of scholars, and we challenge them to be the example, not just in the extracurricular social engagement piece, but in the scholarship piece, and in the student engagement, and the civic involvement, and in the social justice, and in the recruitment. Those pieces better expose students to who our Greek fraternities and sororities are. Thus, it has a greater likelihood that students will want to participate and join. And as I tell my Greeks here, I want them to run the yard. I
okay.
want them to be visible. I want them to be engaged. I want them to be a part of shaping the college experience for Coppin State University. And so there's great value in Greek life, and we value it very seriously and deeply here on campus. And everything from freshman move-in to new student orientation to helping us to recruit, our Greeks are involved across the board. So they have an opportunity to showcase who they are and what they're about to freshmen from day one. We're also committed to making sure that students use the best judgment when it comes to fraternities and sororities.
Okay.
And so we are doubling down and making sure that hazing activities that go against the expectations of the university and the national fraternities and sorority organization bylaws, those things do not find their way into our campus.
Okay.
Now, Brian, do those things still take place? Yes, they do. As a university president and a former VP of student affairs that had overseen Greek life for, decades, and as someone who participated in that life, I know those things still have the possibility of creeping in to any campus environment.
Correct.
What we try to do is be very intrusive and proactive in helping not only the fraternities, but the aspirants understand that everyone has a responsibility not to engage in this unauthorized behavior. And there are consequences for any and everybody that participates individually and collectively for the fraternity or sorority. So we are very firm on that, and we will continue to do our best in making sure that students don't sacrifice sound judgment and their health and wellness for the sake of joining a fraternity or sorority.
Well, I know that you are, you're a leader in the area of campus behavior. You're very concerned about campus behavior when it comes to alcohol consumption, when it comes to sexual misconduct, all of those things. Like, if I want to send my daughter to Coppin State and she's going to be a member living on campus, how is her security? What is that like?
Well, I will tell you that this is one of my favorite topics. I'll start by saying that here at Coppin State University, our university police department is a full-fledged university police department. They have all the rights and privileges as a sworn police officer. They have the authority to detain, arrest, and they do carry weapons. They are a full operating police department.
Awesome.
I will also tell you with great pride that I am the president of the second safest residential campus in the USM system, and to include Morgan State University.
Had you to dig me, didn't you?
Okay. Well, no, Brian. Only because they fall outside of the USM system. That's the only reason I put them in there. Because when you look at our Clery data, which all universities are required to have on their website and outward facing, according to federal law, our Clery data, hands down, with the second safest residential university in the system. You would not appreciate that based on my location. And that's why I always stress that, because our students will tell you they feel extremely safe on campus. We have a very safe campus. And we challenge our students to make sure they understand they have a role to play in the shared governance of their own safety. We can't prevent them from, you know, being the victim of a crime. We can't stop everything, but how we handle it and how we respond is very important. And those are the things that we talk about here on our campus. We challenge our students not to prop doors open to the residence hall so that your boyfriend or girlfriend can, you know, come and visit you after 1 o'clock a.m. Right?
Right.
We challenge them not to give the you know, code to the front door to the Grubhub person because you don't want to come downstairs.
Right.
You know,
right.
we challenge them to be cognizant of, you know, where you go, you know, who you're engaging with on social media, face to face. So we have a full comprehensive curriculum regarding safety, bystander intervention, sexual misconduct, all of those things that we know are important. But as I challenge our students, these things only are impactful if we all engage in safe, sound judgment and behaviors on and off campus.
I ask because when I drive past Coppin State, your security is all over the place, and they often... I get nervous, you know what I mean? Because they are out there in full force in their vehicles, and I'm like, what kind of budget do they have? Because they're all over the place. So yeah, I can imagine it's a very safe place to be for students.
You touched on something that is so important to me, and that is the very essence of community policing. Our police officers are engaged in our campus community. They are an extension of the educational arm of the university. They are not here to cuff and stuff and all of those things that other police officers have to unfortunately do in, you know, major cities or, you know, rural areas. They understand their job is to engage our students, to build relationships, and to understand that in every situation, there's an educational moment, right? And so that's what we always reach for first, is that educational moment and teaching our students and making sure they understand that that moment of bad judgment doesn't have a profound adverse implication on the rest of their lives.
Right. You know, speaking of that, every school has its situation. Basketball is huge for you guys. You guys back in 96 or 97 went to the Sweet 16.
Yes.
Is that right? I watched the game.
That's right.
You defeated, I think it was South Carolina. You guys were a number 15 seed or something. It was a big Cinderella story. And it brought a lot of recognition and money to the school. So now you have a situation, because I grew up here, I'm familiar with the school and everyone here. You have a situation where you have like a Juan Dixon. I think you guys just let him go. And he didn't have the best season, which is 9-23 or something like that. But there's also this kind of thing hanging around Coppin State that everybody's hearing about. We read about it, we hear about it. And how are you handling that? Like, has that affected you, the whole blackmail situation? I know you can't talk a lot about it because you guys are going through legal things. But how has that affected the morale of the campus? How has it affected you as the president? What are you guys doing about that right now?
Yeah, thank you, Brian. That's an excellent question. You know, and I'll say this. With regards to the morale to the campus, it has had no negative impact on the campus. Now, again, I stress that because this event occurred in 2018.
Right.
So many of the students who are here today were not here in 2018.
Okay.
And so it has not had any negative impact on them. And it has not had any negative impact on our men's basketball program. Former Coach Dixon, who I think did a great job with developing young men and, you know, working with them, that was one of the areas where I think he was very strong in raising the expectations of what it meant to be a student athlete at Coppin. As the president, I appreciated that because to me, I want to make sure that students who find themselves in situations that are unsafe or unfavorable know that they can reach out to any administrator, the president, my cabinet, the faculty staff across this campus for help and support. And that situation that we're referencing, which was involving two students, was an unfortunate situation all the way around. It is the type of situation that you don't want any student to have to go through.
Right.
But I will tell you, Ryan, I feel great about how the university internally, through our Title IX process, handled that situation. The external folks that we brought in, the services that were, you know, put in place. Because, again, even though it happened in 2018, it came to light in 2020,
right.
2021. And so we were able to move and put the right support systems around those students and some of the other student athletes as best we, you know, could. And so I'm always, as the president, mindful of our actions after something takes place, and what are we doing proactively to prevent these things from taking place? And this is a situation where I think on the front end, the behavior of the two students fell below the expectations of the university. The university stepped in and did what was required by us under, you know, Title IX. And, you know, we are now letting this process play itself out through the courts. And, you know, I am confident that when those proceedings are all done, folks will be able to look at this without the veil of secrecy, because right now we can't talk about it, but, you know, so much. But they will say, yeah, there's no there there. And that these were two students who didn't make the best decisions. And unfortunately, they had consequences that impacted their lives. And my hope is that we could always steer students away from those type of behaviors. But Coppin is always going to do what is right in those situations. I'm always going to do what's right because the buck stops with me as the
right.
university president.
Right.
And I'm going to hold people accountable. And I'll say this, Brian, on this piece. I said in public before, and I said behind closed doors, if there was any wrongdoing on behalf of Juan Dixon in that situation or anyone in my athletic department, Juan Dixon and my director of athletics would not be working at Coppin State University.
Okay.
Juan Dixon's separation from this institution was performance-based. That's all. Nothing else to it, and I encourage people not to buy into the, you know, myths out there. It was performance-based. Over a six-year period, you have 53 wins, almost triple the number of that, and double the number of that, and, you know, losses. It was performance-based, and that's the only thing it was.
Okay. Well, you know, he is like the darling of Maryland, being a Terp and taken into
right.
a championship. So people were definitely invested in his success, no matter where he went. But when he lands up at Coppin State and then these things happen, of course, they're going to attribute what happened to his being let go. So I'm glad to hear you clarify
yeah.
that for me. I really, really am. And I'm just so happy that you're able to talk as candidly about it as with me without any fear, and I appreciate that as well. You know, because I can't believe that it's been kept as quiet as it's been kept in this city, in particular this city. We're in Smaltimore, but you really don't hear too many people
yeah.
talking about it. You know, even though it's in the
yeah.
news and in the papers, you don't hear a lot of people talking about it. So I'm very happy that you're able to discuss it with me as much as you could have and clear some things up for me. So I appreciate your time, Dr. Jenkins.
Thank you.
I really, really do. It's been a pleasure. And although you're at Coppin State, You know, my hat's off to you. I wish you nothing but success. But success. I really, really do.
Yeah. Well, listen, it is my pleasure. Again, thank you for the platform to, you know, talk. And I'll just say this very quickly. Y'all are doing some good things over on the east side. We beat you in your last home game.
I know.
Basketball. But nevertheless, you know, Baltimore, Brian, is very fortunate that we have two outstanding HBCUs in this city. And I think individually and collectively, we're going to continue to do great things for the residents of Baltimore and those who come, you know, to us outside of Baltimore and beyond. But we are very fortunate in that front. And, you know, as the president, I'm going to continue to do everything I can to move Coppin forward. And having the opportunity to talk with, you know, very influential people like you and to share our message on your platform, to me, is very, very impactful. So thank you for the opportunity. I greatly appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. You take care, sir.
All right. Be well.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye. You know, I laugh. It's funny because every time I've seen the dean of students or president of a university portrayed by an actor in a movie or a TV show, they've always been stuffed, shirted, rigid. But Dr. Jenkins has some swag to him. You know, he's a real cool guy. So I'm really, really happy to know that Coppin State is being well taken care of. So I appreciate him coming on. Now, I know you hear the music, and that can only mean one thing. It is time for the Petty. Let's get him on the phone and see what he's talking about today.
Brother B, how are you?
I'm good,
Happy
Petty.
Sunday to you.
Same to you, buddy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing just fine. And let me wish you a happy belated birthday.
Yeah, man. I'm getting older, man.
Yeah. You're getting up there, Brother B. And I'm telling you, I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you celebrate it. And I'm telling you, I hope it's one thing, and you probably didn't do it, but you probably should have done it. You should have gone down to Audi Field to watch those D.C. Defenders who are 6-0. They are undefeated. Man, they are the cream of the crop of the XFL.
I know.
They took one which was probably their toughest battle when they played those Houston Roughnecks. And they are the two best teams in the XFL, but now it's the Defenders who are on top. And you know what? That may have been a preview of the XFL championship game because they're both atop of their divisions.
What do they call that championship game? Is it like the XFL Bowl or, like, what is it? All I hear is championship game.
XFL championship game.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
All right. I just thought it had some type of exotic name or something.
Those defenders better be careful because, you know, we've watched a lot of football game in the past, and there's that trap game.
Right.
And
right.
They have a trap game coming up because they'll be taking one of those winless Vipers out of Vegas. So they better. I'm sorry, they'll be playing Orlando, which is another. It's a tough team, but they better watch out because that could be their trap game.
Yeah, you know, and it'll be the winless ones that'll take them off of their throne. Watch.
And that they better be careful. But if somebody gets a chance, look, they can hear my voice, go out there and support those defenders because they are looking awfully good. And, you know, the XFL will be playing all the way until May.
Right.
And they'll be basically the USFL starts in about approximately 2 weeks. And there'll be some games where they'll both be fighting for TV ratings. That should be very interesting. Somebody brought this up.
What's
Maybe
that?
Maybe they should have a XFL and a USFL championship, and the winner of that game plays the worst team in the NFL.
That's a lot of football, man.
Yeah, that's a lot of football, but that'd be interesting because now they're saying, well, guess what? Let's do this. Let's find out who the champion is between the XFL and USFL. And put them up against the worst team in the NFL, and that team that loses, if it's the NFL team that loses, they have to go to the XFL, the USFL, and the winner goes to the NFL.
No, that'll never happen. That'll never happen.
That's just wishful thinking. But hey, let's talk about what's going on with those Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson. I'm telling you, this is like a big soap opera. Every time I turn around, there's something huge. And the latest that I've heard is that he just may sit out the season. Now, he's already there's been a tweet out there that he requested a trade in early March. And I'm like, wow, he wants to leave Baltimore.
Yeah, but then he recanted it, you know, because I think Harbaugh gave a conference saying that he was going to be the starting quarterback. I don't know, man. It is a soap opera. They go back and forth.
And you know, the thing with the agent that wasn't the agent, that's a business partner, and man, this thing is crazy.
It is crazy.
But Brother B, let me ask you a question. Could you imagine sitting out a season where you were going to get paid $32 million?
I don't think his moral character will allow him to do that. I don't think he'd do it. I really, really don't. Plus, he's auditioning for another team. So I don't think he would do it.
Well, here's the thing, Brother B. You have to realize that he was put on a non-exclusive franchise tag. Go ahead, sign that tender, and ball out. Because now you're a free agent. Somebody's going to come to you. It might be the Jets. It might be, Green Bay's going to lose their quarterback if Aaron Rodgers does go to the Jets.
Right.
It could be Atlanta. You know? So go ahead, sign the tender, get the $32 million, ball out, and then it's a bigger payday. Why not?
Right. I don't know, man. I'm eager to see what's going to happen, but at the same time, I really, really want him to stay in Baltimore. I mean, I really, really do, and I want them to pay him. They're going to pay him. I have no doubt they're going to pay him.
Here's the bad thing. Deshaun Watson and Cleveland, man, I don't know what they were thinking about, because when you give someone that much money,
guaranteed,
which goes against the cap, can you get any other talent around to play with him?
No. And that's why they'll always be a subpar team as long as he's at the helm, because they're not going to be able to bring anybody else in.
And who knows how long he'll stay healthy.
Exactly.
So, because you can't get any offensive linemen. He has no one to throw to. The running game is okay, but man.
And the crazy thing about Deshaun Watson is I never thought, obviously he's a talented quarterback, but when he was with the Texans, he never showed me that kind of talent. Like, I never thought him to be that caliber of a quarterback.
Well, the Texans didn't have much talent either outside of DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, really, tell me who else was on the Texans that was really good.
Who the hell else you need to throw to? But who else do you need to throw to except the DeAndre Hopkins? He caught everything.
Like this. Well, yeah, he did, but you double team him with some outstanding corners or safeties, and you gotta have someone else to throw to. You have to.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
With that being said, the same thing with the Ravens. Lamar, yes, go get paid, young man. But the same token, leave a little money on the table so they can get that talent, so you can throw someone that you can throw to. Because who wants to come to Baltimore when they're not going to get paid, when you have a quarterback that's really not going to throw you the ball? Who wants to come here?
Nah, you're right. It's definitely a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation for the Ravens. So.
Let me tell you something. With Cincinnati, that's stacked. Pittsburgh seems to be getting better. I mean, Cleveland's Cleveland. Where are the Ravens going? What are they doing? Are they going to start rebuilding? Because you're not going anywhere with Tyler Hunter.
Right.
I'm sorry. You're not going anywhere. You're not even going to the playoffs.
No, you're right.
You're just not going. I mean, the AFC is stronger than a lot of people think of this. I mean, so the saga continues. We just have to stay tuned and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely right, brother. I appreciate you. You're on top of it, and I appreciate you for it. Because we're definitely interested. We definitely want to know the skinny on it. So you give it to
me. Well, let me tell you something. The more I hear or the more that I get, the more you'll have. So right now, the saga continues. He's still technically a Baltimore Raven. But pretty soon, the draft is coming up next week. Next month. And we'll have to see.
Yes, we will.
Will Baltimore be giving up with those two? Will they be parting with those two first round picks to get rid of Lamar? Or
it's not going to happen.
Well, we'll see, man. We'll see.
It's not going to happen.
Well, I'm out of here, man. Look, I'm going to have some scores for you next week. I'm going to have some predictions. And I'm telling you right now, Houston Roughnecks, DC Defenders, XFL Championship, May 13th. You heard it here first, Brother B. I gotta go. I'm out of here. Peace.
Peace, brother. Well, you heard it from the Petty. He's saying put your money on the DC Defenders. He seems to think that they're going to win the XFL Championship game. And I don't doubt them. I watch them. They are something to see. And I do, I support them. So, I mean, Baltimore doesn't have an XFL team. And this team is 50 minutes down the road. So, you get an opportunity, go check them out. They do play at the DC United Stadium. The price is definitely right. and you will not be disappointed, I promise you. All right, I've got about 2.5 to 3 minutes left, and I want to talk about two stories that really bothered me in the news this week. The first one is about the shooting that happened in Nashville that killed these three kids and three adults, and it happened at what's called the Covenant School in Nashville. And here's the crazy thing. The killer was a 28-year-old former student of that school, and he was under care for an emotional disorder. Well, he was still able to purchase seven weapons, an AR-15, a 9mm Kel-Tec, a 9mm Smith & Wesson, and, you know, and a few more. But here's the thing. It's perfectly legal in Tennessee to buy a gun without a background check. In Tennessee, in 2021, it became the 25th permitless carry state. So you could carry a gun in public without ever having to have a background check. Why would any state in the union or anywhere would want to have such weak gun laws with all of the mass shootings that we've had in this country? At what point, I guess there is no point, money rules all, clearly, when it comes to gun lobby and the NRA. And it's so unfortunate because there are going to be so many other children that lose their lives because men want to line, well, men and women want to line their pockets on the Hill. It's such a shame, and it's primarily the right. And it's not going to change until one of their children or grandchildren is going to be sitting in their class, in their private school probably, and get blown away. That is when the gun laws are going to start to change, when it starts happening to their children or grandchildren. It seems that every bill that is brought before the House in reference to stronger background checks or gun safety regulations is shut down. We all know why. We all know that it has a lot to do with the money that the NRA lobbyists give to congressmen. But I want to know what you think. I want to know if you think all guns being confiscated from private citizens is a good idea. Do you think that law enforcement should be the only ones with guns, or the military should be the only ones with guns? Now, there are certain countries, continents that definitely have that in place. Look at Australia, for example, and they have not had a mass shooting since they took guns away from citizens. So what do you think? Is it time? I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but death by firearm, by gun, is the leading cause of death for children. Did you know that? Not car accidents, not disease, but guns. They are the leading cause of death for children in this country. And it can all be prevented. We can get guns out of the hands of the people who are not supposed to have them. We can get guns out of the hands of people who do not need them. We don't need teachers carrying guns. We don't need preachers carrying guns. We just don't need the guns on the street. Now, this is my opinion. I served in the military in an infantry unit. I'm not afraid of guns, but I also know that I don't need an arsenal to keep my house safe. I mean, what kind of life am I living if I need, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 guns to keep my house safe? I'm just sick of all of this death, especially of these young children, and it's completely unnecessary. Tell me what you think. Get at me at On with Brian Pettaway on Instagram, and let me know how you feel about what I'm saying here. Also in the news, Trump, former President Donald Trump, was indicted, and a lot of people on the right are very upset about it. They're saying that it was a witch hunt, as they always do when he gets in trouble. But my thing is, how can everyone around you be guilty except for you? Like, how can all of his cronies, almost his entire cabinet, have spent time in jail or indicted for a crime except for him? It makes no sense to me, right? But he's finally been indicted, and he faces more than 30 counts related to business fraud in an indictment from a Manhattan grand jury. Now, he is the first American president, the first one in American history, that has ever faced criminal charges. Tell me what you think. Do you think Trump will spend any time behind bars, or do you think it's just smoke and mirrors? Let me know. Again, get at me on IG at On with Brian Pettaway and tell me what you think. Well, listen, it's been a blast. It's been an hour. I've got to go. But I so appreciate you spending your Sunday with me. I hope you had a great time. And remember what I said. Relax today on Sunday. Get all the rest you can. Do nothing. But tomorrow, wake up. Conquer the world. All right? Because the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. All right, people. Have a great Sunday. I got to go. Peace.